and welcome to the next 100 Days podcast. My name is Graham Arrowsmith.
And my name's Kevin Appleby. So, Graham, all the way from Australia this morning, we've got an expert mentor.
Yeah, I think we both need one, Kevin. So this is going to be very helpful for us both and hopefully for a few listeners listening in as well. We have Katrina Friel and she comes all the way from Australia. Katrina, welcome to the next 100 Days podcast.
Oh, thank you for having me, guys. It's wonderful.
Well, we've just found out something about you. You've been married for 38 years, which is fantastic. So, you know, you have to give us your husband's email address. I'll send him an email of congratulations and a special...
Or commiserations.
Yeah.
Poor guy.
But obviously you've had a long relationship. And I suppose in a way, you enter the relationships, you create relationships with people that you coach. So what is it about your style that sets you apart from other people when it comes to coaching people?
I think it's the one thing I hate about coaching industry, and that is nobody wants to touch anybody and nobody wants to do any work with anybody. Everyone wants them to be at arm's length. I'm the complete opposite of that. I have a 12-month relationship in that 12-month coaching program that I generally do. I have one product and that's it. And so for 12 months, it's very deep, it's very meaningful. And to me, it wouldn't be fun to be at arm's length. I want to get down, I want to get dirty, I want to get into it. Yeah. I want them to call me. It's a unlimited access in that 12-month time. So I do that on purpose so that they're getting the help they need when they need it at the time, not I'll see you in a month and we'll talk about it then. So I suppose what I'm trying to say is that it's very intimate and it's I'm willing to get my hands dirty and I'm willing to get involved in their life on a number of levels, not just professionally, but to me, work is life, life is work. It's all one thing when you're an entrepreneur, really, especially when these guys are starting out. They have to earn their stripes, as it were. So, you know, they're going to come up against themselves and they need a coach to hold space for them when they're facing imposter syndrome, self-doubt, the inability to say no, people-pleasing, all the things.
Yeah. Well, I mean, if you spend any length of time with any one person, you'll get to know them quite well. You're going to spend about an hour or so with Kevin and I this morning, and you've already figured out everything you need to know about Kevin. We had a bit of a mishap when we started, but he looks fine now. His cheeks are rosying up.
Good.
But he looks in fine fettle right now. But the more you get to know somebody, I guess the better. Well, it's bound to happen, isn't it? If you know somebody really well, then they'll share things as they're going along. They won't feel as intimidated. It's not a one-off thing in a month. But are you kind of limited in the sense that how many of those types of relationships can you have simultaneously? I mean, what, 1, 2, 3, 500?
So you're right. I'm not about quantity. Mine's about quality. So because of the price point that I'm at and the price point that I train and teach my clients to have, it means that, it's at that other end of the scale. So people expect the best, they want the best, they want access to you, and they pay for that privilege. So, yes, I would have a maximum of 20 clients in a year that I can handle. And that gives me a very lovely lifestyle and not overwhelmed with too much coming at me. Plus, I also break them up into groups so that there's only ever really five on the boil at any one time, and then the next group will sort of start in at the right time. But when I'm building assets, I build it all for them. It's all a done for you model. So in the first 90 days is all the big heavy lifting for me, and then the rest of the 12 months is them starting to do it and get out there and start to build their business under my protection.
You kind of lost me a little bit. This first 90 days,
yes,
you build assets. What does that mean?
That means that I'm building the book for them, the website, the brand, the signature program, setting up all the social media so that within 90 days, their personal brand business is built with all the assets that they need to actually get started. Because what I found when I first started 25 years ago is I was just training, showing them how to do it, where to go, what to do, and I found that nobody did anything. So I realized that people really need that technical support. So I do it for them now. And that started 20 years ago, and I've never looked back. It's the best thing ever. And now, 10 years, 10 years sort of more lately, have you noticed that done for you is now coming into fashion? They've realized people need things done for them because they're not the expert in that thing. So why are they trying to battle to build all these assets when they can't? I
I
want to get them
completely
set
agree.
up so that they can get on with the thing that they're good at doing, and that is their personal brand business, whatever that may be.
Okay, but I mean, you're an author yourself, and you've
Yes.
written a number of books, but we'll come to that. But
Yeah.
for them, I mean, we've talked to other people who've been on the show, and they can put a book together pretty quickly in some cases, and other
Yes.
cases that we've had people who are publishing
Thank you.
companies, and they basically help promote the book and so forth. And the thing that comes through from the book, and Kevin will recognize this, is that it's almost like you're writing it not necessarily for people to read it, but for and you'd like them to read it. But effectively, it's an authority card. It's a bit like having a business card that's yay thick, and in a sense. And it also, I guess, structures the way that somebody will think about you as an individual. So it's a really important thing that you're doing, but how is it you go about writing that book? I mean, presumably you just sit down with them, do you, and take lots of notes?
Yeah, so I have a 2-day kickoff. That's the way I do it. So the first day, I'm taking them through the business strategy, what I'm going to do, why I do it, where the money is, where the money isn't. And I show them what the personal brand business looks like. So they're kind of essentially signing off on that structure. Then day two, because of the first day two now becomes much more of a creative day where I pull out of them their philosophy, and that turns into a book outline. And then I put a little bit of meat on the bones so that when they go away to bash it out, the book should really write itself. And I want that book back in 7 days, ideally. But they can have up to 30 days if they want it because they're those types, you know. But I don't want them to spend a lot of time on it. I want them to just get it out and back to me so that I can edit it, proof it, design it, and create from a rough diamond, I can polish it up a bit.
And let's just look at the 20 clients and 20 books. Out of the 20, how many are you like in terms of the headline of the book? The thing that's probably going to hit you pretty close to being first. I don't know if it's back cover or the front cover, but let's just say it's the front cover. The headline of the book. Do you write it or do they write it?
I tend to do that sort of thing, and normally it falls out in day two. Normally it will fall out, but we're not signing off on it. We're saying that's a working title if it does fall out on day two. But sometimes when I'm in the first editing process, sometimes something will switch and change, and what they've said in there becomes the book title and the subtitle. And often what they've said in there, either in the introduction or the wrap up, ends up on the back of the book. So I just leave it loose. I never wed myself to anything, and I don't get them to wed themselves to anything because it's a fluid thing until we lock and load.
You must have done quite a number of books then. I mean, you must be a
I
publisher's dream. I mean, couldn't you
have.
know you.
Well, I just don't think it should be labored upon. In the olden days when you and I were young, people were laboring over their books for
I'm still
years.
young, by the way. I don't know what you're saying.
Yes,
You're
we
telling
are.
me.
Yeah, I'm
I know.
56.
Collecting your pension yesterday, Graham.
Well, yeah. Well, that was a lie.
Yeah,
I'm
you blew it, Graham.
going through my 40s at the moment, you know.
Yeah, so I just think it shouldn't be labored, and that's the problem now. We can actually, I say to my clients, look, If you think of yourself as a 12 book series, every year you can do it, you should do a book. And remember, once you've done that philosophy book, that thing that the first book, the thing you stand for, every chapter in that book is a book in of itself, if you wanted it to be. And the book, as you say, Graham, is a positioning tool, is a very expensive business card. Yes, I agree with all of that. But the main thing that we're doing it for is the rigor and laying down a level of confidence that you wouldn't have if you didn't sit down and write it. And I need them to have that first layer of confidence layered in, because now I'm going to build a brand and a website on top of that with all their socials. And then I'm going to create a 10, it could be a five, 10, $20,000 signature program out of it. And so I need them to have all those layers of confidence by the time I kick them out onto the street.
It's a heck of a formula. I mean, it
Thanks.
seems to work as well. Let's just have a think about the types of people. Would Kevin Appleby the kind of ideal audience? I mean, let's just say he's got a lot of bags of money, and what type of people want that kind of personal brand? Is it are they tend Do they tend to be younger, or maybe they've done a bit of career already? I mean, where are they?
25. I get a lot of people with 20, 25 years experience. I get the older, more mature group, but I do get young people as well. And I've also had 85-year-olds who wrote, I think it was eight books this thick in a year. And he was 85. So I did that as a client's father. I did it as a, not a, I got paid, but it was a favor before he sort of got too old, you know, got to get it out.
I actually think that, I don't know. I mean, we've had this conversation before during the China virus. We basically a lot of us were looking at the ways in which we could actually create things for and one of the things that came up was memories. And one of the things I did just I think just after the period that there was an over 75 thing. I was associated with a charity in the village, and I went along with a camera and just interviewed a few people. And the over things about the over 75s, those filters that we are well, some people use. Kevin uses them all the time, as you know.
I had
But
none.
they have no filter, so they call a spade as a spade. And the point is, I just can't stop myself laughing sometimes because they say exactly how it is. But the beauty is they all have stories, and I fear that there's just not enough of the world's stories being captured. And I think there's a real opportunity for someone somewhere to create that. I know some people try funeral directors, but it's a god awful place to do it. Realistically, it needs to be
Oh, and
back of you.
it's harder than you think that
Yeah,
I had a
but.
business called A Hero's Journey, and the hero's journey was for that exact product, is because my grandfather died at 101 week. And he had the most incredible life, the most incredible stories. He told them all to me because I used to love to listen to them. And then he died, and I'm like, oh my God, that was a whole book that I should have, could have written. And I just didn't want anyone else to be in that position. So I created that opportunity for people. But unfortunately, I had to move on from that because the older people, while they're funny at parties, as you discovered, Graham, they actually are not willing to pay for it. Their families aren't willing to pay for it.
No,
And
no.
the people are so, what would you say? They're so humble that they think it's not worth it.
I
And
there are
so
challenges.
there's no pain
I don't know.
there.
I feel we're living in a new
Shame.
place now where there are ways in which you can do that, I think, probably at a lower fee. But I do take your point. There is an opportunity, I think, to capture a lot more people's work. One of the things about reaching a milestone, as we discussed earlier, it is that you do start thinking about these sort of things. Now, I'm not 100, and but the point is, you do start thinking, well, hold on a minute, the rest of my life is going to be as a pensioner? You know, and I've always thought when I was a kid, well, they're really old. So, you know, is there a time, you know, to become like one of your clients? Could I still have, you know, I don't know, 10, 15 years of a reasonable career, but with the right kind of branding?
100%. 100%. I cannot say it enough. I am out there speaking on stages, encouraging people to put this together for their final chapter. And I don't mean final chapter as in then you die. It's like your final career chapter. What is your contribution? Your contribution at my age, so 50 to 60 to 70, is going to be more immense over the next 20 years than any of my 30s, 40s and whatever. So in spiritual terms, we call that the crone. So in a woman goes from maiden to mother to crone. That's just from a female perspective. Sorry to get woo-woo on you. But essentially that crone period, I'm out there saying to these women, stand up, contribute. You're the wise woman of the village now. You have to contribute now and bring the rest of us up with you. And if you're not contributing, and a lot of women don't, they're just, what are they doing? I have no idea. I never want to retire. I want to be on stages for the rest of my life. And when I do get a bit old in the tooth, I want to be still writing. So I'll write books till the day I die. And there's no reason why I can't. And back to your point about capturing stories, now AI will transcribe your stories. So young people, young, you know, the children of these people should get the phone out, record them every time they start a story, and capture, shove it all in a Word document, and then let me put it together in a week. It's done.
I completely agree with you. I think that there are definite ways in this new era that you can do that sort of thing. And
I wish I'd had it in my grandfather's day, but before all that.
Is the world changes positively though, isn't it, Katrina? Yeah. I mean, Kevin, you are you ready to write a book? I mean, I suppose you got a load of things. I mean, you've done all kinds of things in your time.
It's something I've thought about on many occasions, Graham, and the opportunity to actually just get on and do it has never quite arisen. But you know, just listening to what you've been saying so far, Katrina, about becoming the crone, isn't giving back all that knowledge. Now, I just wonder at the moment, does that get severely impacted by AI? Are people still prepared to listen? Or are they going to ChatGPT for all the answers?
Yeah, I think we're in the middle of a transition. I think that AI actually helps us write our books quicker and faster than ever before. I don't think we should shy away from that. And Amazon are already asking us every time we upload a book, have you used AI? And so they asked us a year ago, were we using it? So they're obviously tracking the uptake of AI in book preparation. And AI can help us in so many different ways. It's really, really fantastic. So if you ever do want to write a book, now's the time, because it's easier than ever and quicker than even coming through me, because I write them quick, but this is now taking it to another level. That being said, though, what is going to happen with the AI revolution is that real, human, natural is going to become favorable. And so books that are obviously human and really, really are real and raw and gorgeous are going to become very good entertainment for people. Just like podcasts. Podcasts are now going to come into their own. We thought they'd already reached a peak. No, because we can't fake this.
No.
Kevin, Graham and I are really here. There is no recording every word we say. But we are real, and that's what people want. They want to hear real. They're going to have enough AI in their lives soon enough. So what they're going to be seeking out is raw and real. So being live on social media, being live on a podcast, reading a book that's written in a real, genuine way that a computer couldn't do, that's what's going to become fashionable.
Kevin, what do you say?
So, Graham, turn off that AI version of yourself and let's have the real one in the podcast.
Yeah, I don't know. I think I've been, because I'm involved a little bit with AI, and we've been trying to, I heard somebody had adapted a voice to sound like a female Nigerian, and it was really quite good. I don't know how they'd done, what prompt they'd kind of used to do that, but it was really good. And and I've tried to do that for in the products that I'm using for an English voice. It's okay, but I don't, obviously don't, I'm not following the same kind of prompting that they are. So next week we're talking to an Australian about one of the services, and I really like to have an Australian voice as part of the, it's like an AI agent sits on your website and it'll talk back to you and so forth. And I'd love that to be a kind of a fairly neutral Australian voice without it being, you know, but it for me, that's a level of connection that makes the, you know, the interface between human and AI slightly easier to take. But unfortunately, we start with a bank of American sounding voices and we have to do something about them because sometimes, you know, it's too many. Out of, I think, the 8 different OpenAI type voices, only but one is anywhere close to an English accent. So it's quite challenging. And however, sorry, I'm going off subject here, but when it comes to the things that you just said about, it's not just the book, it's the website, the campaign that goes with it. There's a lot of work there. Yeah, I mean, you're talking about a website. Presumably, you have a template type thing in mind, or is it entirely based on the conversation that you're having?
I create them from scratch each time, but I do have a structure in mind of where I need it to go. And there's certain things that I like in my clients' websites. And with every website, the technology is moving so fast, I'm practically having to learn, and I've just learned my new system and SEO and all the back end and everything. So you've really got to keep up to date. And that's what trips up people starting a business, is all of this will trip them up because they don't know where to start. They don't know who to be with. They don't know who to trust. And SEO is like a cowboy's out there. That's scary, that whole industry. And websites, how many people do we know where they've been left high and dry, not even being able to access their website back end? So scary out there.
I don't mean to intensify the complexity necessarily for anybody listening, is that this week we're with colleagues, we're launching something called an answer engine optimization products, which in English just means that you can actually look at the website that you've got, and it'll tell you how to move from that to be found and for your information to be cited in LLM, the large language, AI assistants like Chat and Grok and all the rest of it, to be so that they find your results. It's a different, it's, some of the SEO is still relevant, but the the new website will need to be found by LLM successfully, and there's a gold rush.
That's a whole new frontier, and that is a gold rush. Right, SEO will disappear, and the new one will come forward. We'll all have to adapt, just like we've adapted in the 80s, the 90s, the 2000s, the 2010s, and here we are at 20s. You know, we're in the middle of the game.
It's changing, and that's one of the things that keeps you young. I mean, if you're involved in that type of thing, or if you're trying to apply it. That's why I have a young assistant, because basically some of it I just cannot, it's just so much. And, you know, I think the young mind, some can get it really quickly, and that's really helpful. But for me, what you're doing for people is you're using that huge amount of experience and talent, and you're just an incredibly confident, I'm going to say young lady. And but you're a business mentor, an expert speaker, an expert trainer, an executive coach and a therapeutic coach. I mean, you're going to have to give us some sort of delineation between therapeutic coach and executive coach. What's the difference?
So an executive coach is where they come to me with sort of talking about strategy and what's going on and what their next book should be about and, you know, executive things. Whereas therapeutic coaching is really the fun bit. It's the bit that's missing in a lot of coaching and mentoring programs, and that is the psychological piece. And if you guys know, really, it's the psychological piece that's the worst bit, because we are our own worst enemies. Yeah. We come with all this baggage and all these limiting beliefs and all these problems, and we don't even know what we don't know. So I have gone and I've been trained in this, and I've worked in the therapeutic world for over 20 years, and I think it's an essential part of helping people. It's really what they need. I can do all the rest, the technical, the executive stuff, all the strategy stuff, the business planning, all that is done and dusted, but it's themselves that will get in the way of their success. And that's what we need to be dealing with over the 12 months. Otherwise, they just stop. They just stop and don't do it.
Okay. So what's the biggest therapeutic strategy of change? What's the biggest intervention that you make in that therapy area? So, I mean, is it stop being a shrinking violet? What do you do with them? Because these people probably on the face of it are pretty successful.
a couple of things I do that I've seen patterns over 25 years. So I know what the patterns are. I know what they're going to deal with, at which stage they're going to deal with it, and when it's going to come up and hit them in the face. The first thing that I like to talk to them about is the challenges that introverts will have versus the challenges extroverts will have. And we deal with those problems first. The next level of therapeutic intervention needs to be, what are the challenges with a masculine energy and what's the challenges with a feminine energy? And what I want to see with entrepreneurs that are successful is that there's a balancing of the masculine energy with the feminine energy, and then you're a whole person, a balanced person. At the moment, I'm doing what you call a masculine activity. See how I'm putting it out there. People that are listening are doing a feminine energy activity, and that is listening and receiving. And so if I can't do this masculine activity, then I'm the world's best kept secret and I'll get nowhere. And so I do those two levels as a given. And then after that, you start talking at the third level, specific limiting beliefs that they've grown up with an either overcritical mother or an overcritical father. And some poor people have had critical parents. And so they have things like, I'm not good enough. I've got to be perfect. Nobody cares what I've got to say, and all these limiting things that aren't true. It's their truth, but I call them lies we tell ourselves.
Yeah. Wow. I mean, there must be so much fun delving into people's lives. You've got to have all these little file cabinets with, if you ever get bored, I'm going to have a reread of that. I mean, you obviously know a lot about people, Katrina. So you must have a fairly, you don't share that detail, but what you're sharing is this sort of high level. And when you're in the down and deep, can you sort of refer to others and the challenge and the way in which they've dug themselves out without naming names and so, because that would be unprofessional, but basically, is that how you do that? You have examples, because it's just another way of sort of getting them from A to B. But I don't know, when you get into the sinews of what you're doing, you're giving us the sort of overall framework. What is it that you will actually say to somebody?
What you're talking about is what we call talk therapy, and what you're talking about is stories and case studies and examples and metaphor. And that's all good. That kind of works. And I'll do a lot of that on stage to the general population. But once you're down in the depths of actual therapy, one-on-one private time, that's where we go into the unconscious mind. We don't want to talk to the conscious mind, because the conscious mind is, quite frankly, an idiot. And it's like using the first computer that was ever invented. Whereas the unconscious mind has all the answers, all of them. And so what we do is we talk to that machine. That technology knows everything. And so we talk to them, we clear things. It's called clearing things. And we kind of rewire and reprogram the brain because the unconscious mind wants to. And we do it in what you would call a meditative or a light trance state. That way we don't have the conscious mind going, hang on a minute. I'm in charge here. Look, the ego needs to be the best and the brightest, and we don't need any of this. So we put them to sleep and we get the unconscious mind doing the work, and the unconscious mind will change and evolve in a heartbeat, in a millisecond.
That light trance state reminds me of how it must be to be a fan at Manchester United, because they're pretty much all like that. I mean, they're in a light trance state. They haven't got a clue what's going on. But the truth of
they're
it is...
They're in a group trance, just so you know.
Well,
at music concerts and sporting events, you're in a group trance
and you're having
a shared experience. That's another skill altogether.
Well, Kevin and I both support clubs. We have true supporters, not...
We're Manchester United here.
No. They're like Manchester... Oh, well.
I'm sorry.
My club could be best described as Manchester United talent scouting business.
Oh well, I think that
we spot the players. Manchester United sign them.
there's a lot of angst there. I know that. I'm sorry.
But, I just have to declare where I sit with my English husband, and it's been Man U for all these years.
I was going to help him earlier, but no longer. He won't be getting any emails or medals from me. But no. If he supports that lot. But you know, I'm over the Pennines, you see, so I support Leeds United. So it's a different game. Although I've got to say, you know, they've had a fantastic, you know, many decades where they've done really, really well. So you know, I have a sort of begrudging respect. But beyond that, but going back to you and this whole idea of, you know, being a sort of this business mentor. I mean, you know, you're going to continue writing and sharing. You do TED Talks, and I know that.
Is I did this one. Some... I'll never do it again.
Oh, you've done the one. That's it, one.
Yeah, it's all you. That's all I want to do. I found that it wasn't my style. My style is very free-flowing. I want to be free to just express and to channel and just to experience. Like, whatever comes out is what's meant to come out in the moment for that audience.
Yeah.
And I believe in that very, very strongly. I have my structure, I know what I'm going to say, and I've done it for many, many years, but it's always fresh and always off the cuff.
Yeah.
And, you know, I like that. Whereas what I found with TED Talks is that I was put into a straitjacket, I had to memorize every word, and I found that difficult, but also too, it took the spirit out of who I am, and it took the realness of what I am and who I am away. And I did it. I've ticked the box. I'm glad I've done it. I love my topic. It's about self-doubt because that comes up for everybody, and I've dealt with it for over 25 years. And the TED Talk brought it all up for me personally. It was the most confronting experience, and it was really interesting having self-doubt while trying to train for a self-doubt talk. It was crazy times. Anyway, did it. Don't like it. And
I hadn't realised that they were quite bureaucratic about the way in which they put
strict.
People in that red circle. I just thought there was spitballing, basically, but no, obviously not.
No, God, no. It's actually rehearsed and rehearsed a billion times. They approve your script. You have to send it all in, and so you can't get off script because they've prepared for you to say this and that has been approved for you to say. And so there's no ad-libbing, no extra, no soul to it.
Yeah.
But some people are very good at memorising. I am not one of those people.
No, I would struggle doing that. Yeah. If I wanted to do anything of that sort, I'd go in with half a dozen bullet points written down. Nothing really. Yeah.
Well, that's a good speaker in my view, and that's what I train my clients to do, is I don't want them to be rote. I don't want them to be memorizing anything. I want them to have layered in their knowledge. They become the expert in their field of excellence during the process. Once I send them out there, they just get better and better and better and better at doing it. Some of them, by the time they hit their first speech, they're bloody good already. Because I've already taken the brunt of their first and second, third, fourth, fifth speech. By the time they hit the road, they are confident, natural, relaxed, not reading from slides, not reading from scripts. They may have a slide. If they're using slides, the slide will be a picture or one word, and that's anchored in for them to launch from. The rest they'll say.
Katrina, tell me a little bit more about your sort of typical client. I'm struggling to understand whether we're taking a person writing a book and creating a business from it,
Yes,
or are
we
we
are.
taking an existing business and creating the book as the calling card?
I can do both, and I've done both, and I get both. It's about 50-50. Corporate people in their corporate jobs with their corporate careers have a personal brand business within them. There's seven streams of income within that that they can access if they're put together correctly. And a lot of people get to sort of 50 and go, is this it? Are you bloody kidding me? And they want to get out. And, if they get retrenched, that's always a good thing because they've got money to pay for someone to put it all together for them. And then, they've got everything they need. They're just not positioned correctly, they're not packaged correctly, and they're not priced correctly. I'll do that for them inside the program. And it can be anybody.
Seven streams of income. Okay,
Yeah.
you've got the book.
Yes.
That's
The
going to be one of
speech,
them.
the speaking business, speaking business, then the training business, which is your signature program where you train that in. And then you've got coaching and mentoring. Then you've got facilitation and consulting.
Wow. You're like the Renaissance woman, what that she's managed to sort of pull everything together. We must have had, I don't know, seven different guests over the last almost 500 episodes that we basically have talked to about individual. Might have been the website, might have been, it's definitely, we've had people on the books and training and coaching and mindset and all that kind of stuff. You look like you've got it all together, which basically means that you have a remarkable brain to be able to hold that. And also be relevant as well, because then you're not going to get left behind in terms of the way that particular parts of that are moving forward. And so, that's some challenge, isn't it?
First of all, thank you very much. I love being called a Renaissance woman. I'd love to think that I was Leonardo reincarnated in a female body. That would be a dream, but unfortunately, no.
We are designing things, aren't you? Your drawings might not be his, but you're creating
I'm
a
drawing
drawing for
businesses.
for your clients, which
I've
is
channeled it
remarkable.
a certain way, and I think the
Yeah.
reason I've done it this way is very, very early on, somebody I learned from, like somebody said, you have to, in business, create an irresistible offer. Now, that was said 20, 25 years ago, and that went straight in. And so everything's been based on that. The second thing that's happened is that I love learning, and I want to work with people who are activated, lifelong learners. Not the 90% of people who are just lifelong learners that will learn by default because they've had to. There's 10% of the world's population who are activated, proactive with their development. They're my client and they are me. I love learning. I would proactively pay and invest in my development. And I've done that over a very long period of time. So now what's happened? Because I've done all that learning, it's all gone in, and now I'm able to give them what they need when they need it because I've got a lot of tools on my tool belt. But it's got to, as you say, be brought into one place. What I don't like seeing is people struggle. So they go to the book people and spend 25 grand. Then they go to the keynote speaking people and they take another 20 grand or 10 grand or whatever it is. Then the signature program people will take another 10. And then coaching qualifications and learning how to coach and putting together a coaching one-on-one program, they'll learn that for another 20. And then will you even learn mentoring? Will you even learn facilitating? And do you even, you know, you could do a whole program on consulting. So for me, I was doing all of that. I was working in those fields, and everywhere I went, no matter what, whether I was on a stage for 40 minutes or whether I was in a training room for 3 days or 5 days, every time someone will come up to me and say, I would love to do what you're doing.
Yeah.
And I call them the sparkly eye people. And when I first started to hear that a lot in the very early days, I realized I had to work out, how did I do it? And so I started to unpack and reverse engineer how I'd done it. And what started as this soup has now become a refined sauce. And I make it look easy, but that's the expert. That's the experience that makes it look easy. It wasn't like that when I first started. It literally was a soup of all of it. Now it's a refined sauce with none of the shit you don't need.
Well, in Australia, where presumably a lot of your clients come from Australia, because if you got to have
global America,
okay,
so New York, London, Germany, Australia, and New Zealand, and so on.
Oh, I see. So would you fly to see them, or would you just?
I work remotely. My biggest years were COVID. COVID just blew my business up. I was actually close to burnout. It was so exhausting. There were so many people just had nothing better to do and all the money in the world. So boom, they're going to finally do my program. But
well, you've managed to turn a bit of a tragedy into a big success, and you've got many years to come. And the beauty of what you've done for us today, share. Do you know the thing I'm going to take away from this? And I'll probably, you know, it is when you've interviewed so many, had a conversation with so many people, you kind of bag one or two little things. But with you, it's this. I want to say confidence. There's something that says I am absolutely on my game. Well, my football team are looking for a striker. I want somebody who's totally confident. You know, I want them to hire somebody who is, you know, got a bit of a swagger, but he's going to knock a goal, got a few goals in. And you're that person. You're that striker. Okay. And if somebody wants to get, you know, really good at, in the next sort of 10 to 15 years across a range of service, income-bearing areas, they're going to turn to you, Katrina, whether they're in London or New York or whatever.
So.
And I think is superb. I'm really pleased that we've had you on the next 100 days. You've been a fantastic guest.
Thank you. Thank you. It's been totally fun. As you can tell, I love talking about it. And I want to save people 5 years and $75,000. That's my goal. And I can do that in 100 days. There's no doubt about it.
Graham, now we've often talked about the entrepreneur, the existing business. No? And that entrepreneur coming along and writing the book as their calling card, as their extra piece of authority. Katrina, largely in what she's been talking about, flipped that round. And it's write the book and create the business from it. Now, that's just an interesting nuance there. Mm. I guess in a way, that's not the first time I've had that thought. I remember going to a book launch by a previous guest, Michael Heppel, who interestingly wrote a book called Write That Book.
Yeah.
And it was very clever, and I actually launched it at a book festival. But listening to Michael that day at the book launch, it occurred to me that the business was the book. And that I think is my key takeaway from today. The business is the book. Not the other way around.
Yeah, and there's so many things that I genuinely think that, unlike a lot of other people who've been quite good at specializing, Not quite good, but very good at specializing. Our guests tend to be pretty special people. Katrina's taken almost like a seam, a coal seam, and she's got kind of gone through it. So there's a bit about the book, and there's a bit about coaching, and a bit about mentoring, and all those sorts of things. And you think, wow, she's creating multiple sources of income for the individual. And from a return on investment point of view, it should be a no-brainer. I mean, if they put the work in, to the book and to everything else that they do, her fee should pale in comparison to the income that would come from the work that they would do over that year. So
Yes.
I'm quite impressed by how she's going about it. And I mean, she's not ancient. She's packed in a lot of experience into the years that she's had.
And another thing that comes across from that approach and thinking about those seven streams of income, each of those streams of income have a lot of the individual in them. There's very little that sounded like passive income in there. And I think that's one factor that we're going to have to be aware of in the age of AI. Being present and there and doing stuff is going to become much more highly valued. I think passive, in a lot of senses, is out of the window.
I tend to agree with that. I think there's going to be a premium on people who are capable of making things real for people. And I think you and I have done that for a long time. I'm blowing our own trumpet here, but we do talk to people over a period and we listen to them. And she said earlier on, Katrina, she said, oh, this idea of the male and the female stylistic brains coming together. And we're not all the same, but there's a general idea that women tend to listen more, men tend to present more. But if you put those things together, I'm not saying that we're the 360 person, but the truth is we do, probe, listen, and hope. But we don't start with a script. We don't start with the TED talk. We don't say you have to stay within this red circle. I didn't know that that was their model, and that would rule me out because I couldn't for the life of me remember 20 minutes of a speech. It would half kill me. And I think the same with Katrina. She is feeding from her environment, and I think that's kind of what we do. We're listening to the things that she's talking about, and then you realize in along the way that actually I'd like to know more about that, and you're asking questions about the types of clients and the income streams and so forth. And that's, I think, the benefit that this podcast, maybe different from others, but this podcast presents to the world. So there you are. That's a little advert for us, Kevin.
I think it is, Graham. And Katrina's there talking about writing a book to really bring your personal brand forward. Is there a way of shortcutting that? Well, I think a podcast is something you should really consider in personal branding, because it's very easy to get out there and talk about yourself on a podcast. And in some shows, it's probably easier than others. And I think ours, the format we use, actually really helps people get their personal brand across.
It's
Other podcasts that are more regimented might be a bit more difficult, but even so, I think, you get yourself on half a dozen podcasts. The advantage, you get yourself in front of other people's audiences as well, your own audience. And I think it's an incredibly powerful way of building that personal brand.
Well, on that self-congratulatory note, I've been Graham Arrowsmith.
I've been Kevin Appleby. Goodbye.
Goodbye.